This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Go from one former football player to another one. Just we're having friends of the show stop by today. Mitchell Schwartz joins us in studio. The Chiefs have a lot of offensive line questions and news out, so no better person to ask, to at least that we know, than having Mitchell Schwartz on the show. Man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, friend of the show. I like that.
Yeah, you know what? We have a rule. If you come on the show at least three times, you're a friend of the show. Now, you're like way past that with friend of the show, but that's our standard rule.
Okay, I'll take the lowest possible. You know, I used to have this really cool audio that came on when I was on, but, you know, that's back in the day when I was more regular.
You know what? We'll get you another open. Barbara was mad that he also didn't have an open as well, so people are at least noticing that they don't have their open.
You know, there's a room right across these windows here. We could blame someone in there. Not saying who that might be, but there's some blame to be thrown around.
Are you coming back? Because you already know the text line's going to ask you right now with the Chiefs having some offensive line questions. Let's just go ahead and get it out of the way. You are retired. You are not coming back to play football.
Oh, absolutely not. Even if I wanted to, I don't think my body could handle it, and it wouldn't be good for anybody, especially Mr. Mahomes, if I was out there and trying to play football in the way my current body is. So, no, that's not happening.
So let's just start with this, because I am curious to get your opinion on this, and I don't think I've ever asked you this before. What makes Joe Tooney so good? You have a brother that played guard. You played offensive line in the NFL. You know who's good and who's not good. What makes Joe Tooney so good?
Well, I think the thing that made him overall good is the consistency of what he did. You know, there are some guys who are, the highs are fantastic and, you know, can't be beat in terms of, you know, what you can bring, but the lows are really bad as well. But Joe's a guy who played at a high level pretty much every single snap, and the rare times he did lose, they weren't fast. You know, they were kind of end of the play, or it was something that, you know, other guys can manage. That's one of the things with offensive linemen is, if you're a streakier guy, yeah, again, those flashes might be more exciting. It might be more fun to see, you know, the pancakes and all that stuff. And not to compare him, you know, to Trey directly, but like Trey's highs are as high as anybody in the NFL. When he pulls in space, when he demolishes guys, when he gets guys on screens, you know, that's the best version of what football can look like. You know, Tooney might not have that absolute ceiling of Trey Smith or Quentin Nelson or Quinn Meinerz or some of these other guys, but the down-to-down consistency, the fact that you never really know that he's out there, the fact that he never gets beat quickly, never really causes the quarterback panic. I think that's really his strongest attribute. You know, if you want to get into the actual offensive line play of it, to me, he just understands power. He understands leverage, where his hands need to be, where his body positioning needs to go. And that, you know, leads to that consistency. But to be able to do it as often as he does, you know, within a game, that's what's special about him.
So as somebody who has negotiated deals and signed extensions with teams, it became kind of clear to me that the Chiefs really had two choices with Joe Tooney. He was not going to play at left guard on a $26.9 million cap hit. That's just not how the league works. So you were going to have to make a decision. You were either going to trade him and take up the cap space, which they saved $16 million, or you were going to have to reach an extension and just spread the cap hit out a little bit. Take us through that kind of process when you're kind of looking at your deal, you're talking to your agent, and you know that something could potentially come down, because this isn't a move to me that is indicative of production. We're not talking about a guy who underperformed and they decided to move on. Like, they had to make a financial decision with one of the better players on their team.
Yeah, it becomes a financial decision, but it's also, I mean, as a player, you're always trying to get re-signed as quickly as the team will do it. Obviously, it has to be to a number that you want. But yeah, once you sign a large contract, you are trying to make more money because guys start surpassing you. And obviously, not many guys in the NFL have Joe's resume. So he has every right to, you know, want to get paid more. And to your point, something had to happen contractually this year, regardless, whether it's extension, release, trade, all that stuff. So yeah, your agent is in contact with the team and kind of talking things through. And, you know, I'm sure Joe's looking at it and saying, I don't know, these guys are making, what, 21, 22 million top of the market. I was making 16. Caps jumped up 25% in the last 2 years. So, you know, you're kind of looking at that guard market. Maybe it's more in the $25 million range in terms of, you know, proportionally to where it should be relative to the cap. And, yeah, it's the team's going to say, well, we don't want to do that. You know, we appreciate everything you've done. We're not going to get to that number. You know, you have two guys that you can choose from if you want to get down to like the specifics of you choose Trey or you choose Joe. And obviously, so far, they've chose Trey. I mean, when they first tagged him, I was thinking, it might be another Snead situation. I didn't really consider the fact that the team might move on from Tooney. So I think this makes it more likely that obviously Trey stays. And it seems like all the wording coming out is that the tag was with the intention of signing to that long-term deal. So, yeah, it's just kind of choosing youth. It's choosing a guy who's a little more physically imposing. Again, doesn't make Trey a better player, worse player, but I think this offense, and especially coming out of that Super Bowl, kind of prioritizing the physicality and maybe some size and some beef.
I think this is a scenario in which I think both sides win. Like, sometimes when you see trades, it's winners and losers. Well, I don't think the Chiefs are losers in this trade. The Chiefs get back $16 million in cap space. Let's see how they spend the cap space. Do they go get Ronnie Stanley? Do they bring back DJ Humphries and spend that money elsewhere? Like, we have to see what the plan is with the money. And you also get a draft pick compensation, and we have no clue how they plan on using the draft pick. I understand why people like this from the Chicago side. I think Chicago desperately needed offensive line help. I think they got the best available offensive lineman, period. I'm talking about in the draft and also in free agency. If you look at Joe Tooney, his versatility, his track record, I think they got the best offensive lineman, period. And now we have to see how Kansas City does with their portion of this deal.
Yeah, well, it's interesting from the Chicago perspective. I mean, for all the Chiefs fans, obviously, it's like, oh, we only got a fourth rounder in 2026. Well, don't you think the Chiefs would try to get better if they could? Like, that's always my thing with these trades is if the team could do better, they would. The team is not in the position to trade a guy for less assets than are available. So this was the best deal that was out there. The reason is you're trading for, you know, an offensive lineman on the wrong side of 30. Now, linemen have a very long shelf life, so that's a little different than a receiver or DB. But he's on the opposite side of 30, wanting his third contract, only has a year left. You understand that you probably have to extend him. And the guy, you know, gets a lot of leverage. I guess this isn't, you know, a huge trade where you're trading first rounders and stuff, but there's a reason that it only took a fourth in a year to get this trade done. So Chicago's either going to let him play the year out, let him walk, or they're going to have to sign him to a top of the market deal again for a guy who's now 30 plus. So it seems good from, you know, both perspectives, and there's pros and cons to both of those. It's interesting. It's, again, something I hadn't really considered as within the realm of possibility. I hadn't gone down that rabbit hole of how they're going to, you know, figure this all out. I mean, I know Juwan, they push enough money down the road. You know, he's staying, Creed, obviously, and then, you know, a couple of young guys for the other tackle spots.
So let's talk about left tackle and what you think their plan could potentially be. Rob wants them to go get Ronnie Stanley. I'm looking at Ronnie Stanley as a guy that's only been healthy one time in the last 5 years, and I would stay away from that, certainly at the price that I think he's going to command. I would go more of a one-year veteran, a Tyron Smith, a DJ Humphries, a Donovan Smith type, and just continue to look in the draft and try to answer it. I guess let's start with Ronnie Stanley. What kind of tackle is he? Is he a guy that you think is worth the big home run kind of swing, the amount of money that it would take to lock him in?
I don't think for us it makes a ton of sense to do that. I think for other teams it might make a little more sense, kind of bring some stability, bring a veteran. I think stylistically, too, he sets a little more similar to Juwan than he's maybe some other guys, which I don't know the team wants to have another guy who's kind of a vertical setter and, you know, can, not the Stanley lets the pocket compress, but the downside to vertical setting is that you're just closer to the quarterback and it's a little less comforting in the pocket. So stylistically, injury-wise, price-wise, I'm not sure those three things all kind of mesh together to make it say, yeah, that's a guy that we need to get. I mean, there's nothing saying that we don't get DJ and Donovan and let those guys battle it out. And you've got a solid backup. So, you know, chances are between those two guys, probably not going to play all 17 games. So now the other guy can be the backup. Put Kingsley at left guard, let him get some NFL experience. You know, he looked, he had some bad plays in week 18, but he was going up against a good defense and first time playing guard there. So, let him settle into the NFL at guard, easier position, you know, hides his weaknesses better. Maybe he has a really good year. And then you can consider, all right, these, you know, two veteran guys got us through the year. Kingsley's more settled, more confident in himself. Now we can switch him out to left tackle and kind of make that transition. So I could see that happening. I mean, I have no idea. This thing is, there's just so many things that you don't really consider when you're sitting here or when you're looking at rosters. I mean, you don't know what guys are available on other teams. You don't know, you know, draft wise, if there's a guy who's, you know, rising up draft boards, falling down, all these different things. Like, there are more options than I think we probably realize. We get locked into, oh, DJ or Donovan or the one left tackle that's a free agent or the in-house guys. Like, there are other things that the coaching staff is turning over those rocks and trying to find something.
No, for sure. And a name that's come up is Taylor Decker for the Lions. He's been a name, a guy that's over 30, a guy who's entering the final year of his deal. It sounds a lot like Joe Tooney. Obviously, they play different positions. I'm not saying that Decker is the player that Joe Tooney is, but, you know, to your point, you kind of got to be looking a little bit beyond your purview. And a player who is entering the final year of his contract, that you can go grab him and you can maybe possibly extend him, that maybe is a route that they decide to go.
Yeah, again, that would surprise me a little bit. I think he did get an extension or bumped his contract a year or two ago. So I just know that we're in the business of trading assets for guys who are, I mean, he's not at the top of the market. The top of the market's like $28 million for tackles. I think he's in the 20 range. But to give up an asset to then pay a guy $20-plus million to only have him under contract for 1 year, and again, he's a little older. You know, in the perfect world, this was the idea with Kingsley, is you draft him, he's a left tackle, he can, you know, the next 10 years grow with Pat and be the mainstay, all those things. It's harder to do when you're obviously a good team and you don't have that left tackle to find him, because you look at most left tackles and they're in the first half of the first round. So it does become trickier. You know, there are some guys throughout the years who have been stellar left tackles who were drafted late in the first round. I mean, Bakhtiari stands out as one of those guys to me. But, you know, finding them, developing them, all those things is a little bit more difficult than we're looking at. So I feel like if every single year it's figuring out the veteran of the year, they're coming in, they're having to learn our system, they're having to learn, you know, the techniques, the way you like to block things, getting comfortable with Pat getting comfortable with him. It's kind of like, you know, I feel like the receiver room the past few years, that was what was exciting going into this year, is, you know, Rashid, his growth from, you know, 2 years ago, and now we can kind of look at that and into this year where she's coming back, Xavier, Travis, all those things. So I think you do want to find some stability. You don't want to do the year-to-year thing every single year, especially at, you know, one of probably the three most important positions in the NFL.
Right now we're in studio with Mitchell Schwartz here for a couple more minutes, about to go through some of the storylines in the National Football League. Let's go up against a guy that I'm sure you've gone up against a time or two. Joey Bosa was released yesterday from the Los Angeles Chargers. The business side is always going to win out. And if you are making the amount of money that he is, and you have 2.5 sacks, 6.5 sacks, and 5 sacks your last 3 years, usually you are primed to get released. What was your reaction to seeing Bosa? And for a team that's looking for a veteran pass rusher, he certainly is going to be a very much in-demand player the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that one wasn't a surprise. They had talked about that last year. They kind of made the decision to roll with Bosa and Khalil Mack, and I think they even adjusted Bosa's contract down a little bit because of the injuries, and they had moved on from Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, so they kind of chose the DNs over the receivers. So it's not surprising he got, you know, let go this year, especially coming off, you know, less production, injured, doesn't play as much. I think he had less than 400 snaps on the year. So, you know, from a starting caliber defensive end or a guy you're paying starter money, that's just not enough snaps. Yeah, as a kind of third down rusher or a secondary guy that maybe comes in off the bench and is all hyped up and knows how to get to the passer, I think that could be a good option. Obviously depends on cost, depends on value, all those things. If that's one of the hard things when you're so used to starting him, and he's been the best guy on his team since Ohio State for sure, and I'm sure in high school. How do you transition to third rusher role, you know, if that is your role? I'm not sure he's a guy you're going to want on all those first and second downs, eating, you know, pulling guards and tight ends and all these different things in the run game. You probably want to utilize him for the pass rush ability. So how does he do as a guy who comes in on second and third down, as a guy who, you know, is a backup who spells others? You'd like to say, oh, he's a good player, he'll figure it out. But, you know, the timing of the game is different. The cadence, how to stay loose, how to stay warm. His ability to read an offensive tackle throughout the game and understand how to best attack them changes as well. So, yeah, if a guy's getting 300-400 snaps a year and, you know, 250 of those are pass rush snaps, I'd like to think he'd be pretty good in that role. But he's got to stay healthy. And then, you know, you have to adapt to the limited snaps and not being able to feel out the guy quite as much.
It looks to me like DK Metcalf is going to get traded at some point here in the next 4 to 5 days. I think he's going to New England. They desperately need wide receiver, quarterback on a rookie contract, all the available cap space. Rob has the Los Angeles Chargers being the favorite. They obviously need some quarterback help, or excuse me, some wide receiver help as well. You pair him with Ladd McConkey. You've got a pretty solid 1-2 punch. Where do you think DK Metcalf could potentially land?
Yeah, those two teams are towards the top of the list. It feels like teams aren't wanting to give up the draft capital. This is kind of the funky thing, I guess, is if you're the team trading DK and you're saying, all right, he's worth a first and a third, or he's worth 2 firsts, or whatever it is, but he's also not worth paying $30 million, then there's a disconnect there. Like, he's either worth paying top of the market, or you can't ask for, you know, 2 first-rounders or whatever it is that you want. So either he's worth it or he's not. And we've seen with receivers, you know, one guy can change the calculus. I don't know that DK's been that guy the last couple of years. I mean, he's been a good receiver. He's been a productive receiver, but you start slotting him into making similar amounts to, you know, Chase and to Jefferson and to CeeDee, to Tyreek. Is he affecting games as much as those guys are? And I'm not sure that you can say yes for that. So that's where it gets difficult to not only pay the guy money similar to them, but also give up, you know, pretty hefty draft capital to get him. But that's where, you know, a New England kind of makes the most sense, especially take the top off. I mean, he's kind of known for those go routes, for being able to get behind defenses. Drake May's got a really good arm. I'm sure they'd pair well in some scramble drills as well.
I like the Deebo Samuel move for both sides. If you're the San Francisco 49ers, as you are entering where you're about to pay your quarterback, Brock Purdy is about to make a lot of money here coming up in the next couple of months or so, and your roster is a little bit top-heavy. You invested in Brandon Ayuk. You spent a first-round pick. Usually someone's got to go, and you also can spend a first-round pick this year. Maybe, you know, Luther Burden falls to you in the draft, which would make a lot of sense in that offense. And if you're Washington, You pair a guy who has played in playoff games, who's played well in some big games. You get him on a 1 year for a 5th-round pick. This is one of those moves that I think you can justify on both sides, and I think both sides come out all right.
Yeah, he hasn't looked the same the last couple of years. Honestly, since I feel like that Super Bowl, we kind of locked him up a little bit and maybe exposed the fact that he wasn't the receiver that everyone thought. I feel like San Fran's mismanaged things in terms of how they fight with their guys in terms of the contracts. I mean, the only one we've had over the last, you know, however many years has really been the Chris one from a couple of years ago. That seemed a little more, I don't know, player or agent driven than others, because typically Kansas City's been able to get contracts done. Guys show up to training camp, you get all the work in. Where San Fran, I mean, Bosa they weren't able to do, Deebo they weren't able to do, Ayuk they weren't able to do. And it just gets into this weird situation where your best player is sitting out, Trent Williams, you know, that whole thing. There's angst. Guys aren't showing up for training camp. They're not getting in the best shape possible. They're having a disappointing year coming off that contract year. I mean, pretty much all of those guys. Now, Ayuk was different. He got hurt, and you know, that's a different equation there. But
last year just felt disjointed for San Francisco. Like, basically from the start of training camp, just everything that could go wrong just went wrong. And you're right, a lot of it was contract. You didn't have Ayuk figured out. You didn't have Trent Williams figured out. A lot of it did start with some of the business side that carried over to the football side.
Yeah, so I think for them, clearing the slate a little bit, I mean, Ayuk's been in contract or trade talks too, which it's surprising. It seems like they kind of want to go clean slate a little bit. I'm not sure cleaning house of all the quality guys that made Purdy into who he is to a degree, and then giving Purdy the contract and then having to restart the talent acquisition. I mean, that was always the thing with San Fran, is the roster was so loaded, the can make up for the quarterback, you know, having some deficiencies. And obviously Brock's turned into a better quarterback, but, you know, if he is getting in that $50+ million range, can he bring more to an offense than Jalen Hurts does? Probably not, because he doesn't have the running ability. You know, can he bring as much or more than some of these other guys, you know, two of them when healthy? Probably not. Obviously there's a health issue. So it's interesting. It does seem like San Fran is changing a little bit in terms of how they view things. I mean, the Trey Lance trade was an admission that the Jimmy G type of quarterback can only get you so far. And then they go and find a better version of Jimmy G, but still a guy who's somewhat limited and a guy who isn't necessarily going to raise the entire roster in a way that a Josh Allen, a Lamar Jackson, obviously Pat, Burrow, Stafford, those guys will. And then you're going to pay him, I guess you can argue, not top of the market, but 90% of the quarterback market. I just don't know that that's the best way to go about business, but seems like that's what they're going to do. That's why it's, you know, kind of fun to watch from the outside.
We got Mitchell Schwartz joining us in studio right now, going through some of the top storylines in the NFL. I'll get you out of here with these two things. I understand that your end of your career was just different than Travis's into his career, but you do sort of know the mindset of, hey, I'm done. Physically, I don't have any more to give to the game. I'm ready to move in a different direction. What was that like when you're sitting there and maybe you want to come back, maybe you don't want to come back, you're talking to friends, you're talking to family, you're trying to decide what the next phase of your life or of the next phase of your life looks like?
Different for me because of the surgery. My whole thing was, I want to just feel 100% and know that my back is like fine, and then I can make an informed decision. And my back never made it to 100%. So it's pretty close, but like still feel nerve stuff every now and again. So I would say I kind of had that decision taken from me to a degree. It just, I felt like I never got fully healthy enough to make a decision that like it would have made sense to even consider coming back. I didn't get healthy enough to consider coming back. Decision was kind of made for me, but I was also at that point got to the point where I was ready. So yeah, I think Travis is a little healthier, you know, than I was at the time. And it's difficult. I mean, you obviously don't want your last game to be a demolishing Super Bowl loss. You know, I saw a couple rumors flying around that maybe he was sick before the game, which would explain a little bit of, you know, kind of the lack of production and seeming like he wasn't having maybe the best time out there. But I don't think that one game would define you in either capacity. I will say, if you feel like you can get in shape physically and you feel like you can deal with another season, it's really hard to turn down making that kind of money and doing the thing you've always done and hanging out with your best friends every day. Like, those are three things that you can't replicate when you're done with football. I guess he can replicate the money side of things. You know, he's having a pretty good go of it financially, you know, off the field. But you can't, if the decision is come back or not come back, I think the thing most guys would regret is not coming back and feeling like, man, I could have gone back for one more year. I wish I had. It's easier to come back for the year and be like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have, and it didn't go the way I wanted. But you can't ever go back in time and play that last year if you're on the fence. You know, that's one thing I think Travis was probably, you know, wrestling with. I feel like we just news Joel Bitonio for Cleveland's coming back another year. Seems like kind of similar situation that you could walk away and you could be pretty happy with your career and made a lot of money and, you know, was very successful. But if you're feel like you're healthy enough to do it, if you have the desire to, the hard part is getting in shape in the offseason. You just get so burnt down on running gassers and working out and doing all those things. But if you feel like you can get yourself in the correct shape and you can physically withstand the course of a season, how are you going to turn down $15-18 million and play another year with all your friends? So it definitely makes sense from that perspective.
Last question here, and I don't think I've asked you a lot of questions over the years. I don't think I've ever asked you, do you have a combine story? I'm sure you went to the combine, right?
I did go to the combine.
Give me a combine story. What was your combine like? Did you run the 40? Did you do the drills, the interviews? What was it like?
Oh, yeah. I did all the testing. That was back when everyone did all the testing. My spider chart is hilarious if you guys ever want to find it. I think the only thing I was over 50th percentile in was weight. My spider chart's a disaster. My broad jump was the second worst in the entire combine, so I'm like a second percentile there. It's not very good. No, I did not have as bad of a time at the combine as other people do. I was, I guess, prepped for it. Like, you know that it's going to be 4 days. You're not going to sleep a ton. You're going to have all these meetings. You're going to be anxious. You know, all these things are going to happen. If you have a decent agent or you have a decent, you know, training program, you're going to understand all those things and go in with the right mentality. You know, the coaches, some of them asked some weird stuff. I mean, I had one of those meetings with Philly, which was Coach Reed at the time, and Eugene Chung was the, I think, assistant offensive line coach or something, and they were kind of grilling me a little bit and asking questions. But, yeah, every team has their own little flair. I think people kind of like to complain about things, and the combine to me wasn't, you know, that bad. It's definitely odd. You're kind of paraded around, you know, as they say, like, you know, a cow or one of these things, you just get shown off and you get down into compression shorts and you get on a scale and they look at you as you're walking off the stage, which is an odd thing to be part of. But no, I mean, it was pretty fine for me. I just had a miserable showing. I had to, you know, kind of tuck my shoulder in to act like I couldn't extend my arm any further to get like one of the lower vertical jumps of the entire combine.
I was going to ask you, that was the vertical for you. I was just about to ask you.
Oh, dude, I like cheated my way to like a 26, which is abysmal. If you're under 30 as a lineman, it's terrible. And I was like 25 or 26.
You might actually be an example that the combine doesn't matter, because you're telling us you didn't test well in the combine and you were the 37th overall pick. Like, you still went very high, even though physically you didn't test well.
It matters. I would give Cleveland credit.
You cost yourself some money. You're saying that if you had gone there and smoked the combine, you might have been like the 19th overall pick.
No, so that was the other thing. My draft was a little bit odd, that at least that year. So we had Matt Khalil from USC was like the top dog, and then we had Riley Reiff from Iowa. Those were the top two tackles. But I was projected to be, you know, 6th through 10th. I think Donald Stevenson was in that draft as well. There were some other guys with better left tackle profiles. So I was kind of seen as a right tackle only, not super athletic, you know.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
A lot of stereotypes going on with the way that I was viewed. And so I was expected to be the sixth, somewhere 6 through 10, maybe in that range. Well, round one, only two tackles went the entire first round, which is like unheard of now. It's, you know, eight tackles every first round. And there were two guards as well, David DeCastro and Kevin Zeiler, two really good players. So now I'm thinking like, oh, man, you know, now tackle 6 through 10 is getting pushed way down. Maybe I'm going to be a third rounder now. I wasn't really sure what to expect. But, yeah, I was the third tackle taken, and they took me at the top of the second, and it totally blew my mind. But, you know, credit to Cleveland, I guess. They, you know, did a decent job and I made them right. No, the combine's just, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you go there, it's stressful, but like every part of that process is stressful. The Senior Bowl is stressful. Meet facilities, I'm coming to work you out. Like, everything is stressful. You're just so prepared for the combine, and now guys have the agency to just choose what drills they want to do, and they don't have to do all of them, where, you know, back then everyone kind of had to. So if you had a weakness, if you had something that, you know, you're a little uncomfortable with, you had to do it, and you had to kind of show what you were made of in front of those people.
That is our guy, Mitchell Schwartz, joining us in studio, telling us some stories about the combine, also going through some of the top storylines in the NFL. Mitch, man, always great to see you, man. We appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, same.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.